Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the Editor-in-Chief of the Journal, coming to you today with an Around the World conversation as I have the pleasure of speaking with Kate Scarf, who's a PhD candidate and dermatologist conducting her studies through the University of Melbourne. I, in the meantime, sit in a very gloomy but at least dry at the moment, Vancouver.
We'll be talking about a paper that she and her co-authors, Margaret Bierman, Neville Chevrolet, Stephen Trumbull, have coming out in the March 2019 issue of Medical Education, entitled Trainees' Perspectives of Assessment Messages, a Narrative Systematic Review.
And Kate, I understand this is actually part of your PhD dissertation, which is beginning to show a light at the end of the tunnel.
But that's correct, Kevin. Yes, I hope to finish my work by the end of this year. It's been a long process. I started off doing it full-time and more recently have converted to part-time. So this is my fifth year and looking forward to finishing it up. But yeah, this paper forms part of my background chapters and we're very interested to look in and find out about what trainees are actually thinking about the assessment messages that they're getting in these assessment formats that we're referring to as the clinical performance assessments. So by that, we're talking about the workplace-based assessments and the more long-standing in-training assessments or in-training evaluation reports, I think they're referred to in North America as.
Mm-hmm. So the overarching focus then is on this whole notion that we can use assessment for the sake of guiding learning and understand the main goal here to be to really try to get trainees' perspectives on whether or not that occurs. What was it that you were seeing in the literature that made you think a proper review of that topic was necessary?
I guess a few things, a combination of, you know, my general background reading for my PhD and also what I'd experienced clinically as an assessor, that the whole idea of these performance assessments being, as you say, to give some guiding information to trainees about how they're performing, how close or how far they are from reaching required sort of standards. And seeing little bits in the literature coming out that, you know, perhaps there was a question about how effectively that was being achieved. Certainly there's a lot of effort put into running the workplace assessments and the in-training assessments. But, you know, as I was reading, I was getting the feeling that perhaps things weren't turning out as well intended as these assessments had been designed. And a couple of experiences that I had, both as a trainee, I remember with a couple of in-training assessments myself, actually never seeing the report or never having a discussion with my supervisor, it just being submitted. And through to seeing some of the trainees talking about the difference in the feedback that they get from different assessors and just being, I guess, a bit up in the air about what people were getting out of these assessments. It seemed to be very variable. So I thought, you know, it would be a good opportunity, given that in-training assessments have been around for many years, but the workplace assessments more recently, that it'd be good to combine the literature on both of these formats and see what's been reported in the literature about what trainees are getting out of these. And I think the idea about combining both of the in-training and the workplace assessments together for me was really because the similarities in that they're both conducted by clinicians and they're both appearing in the workplace. And the clinicians as the assessors vary in their level of engagement and training in the assessments. And, you know, given that they're both occurring in the real life, the authentic situation, as opposed to more objective traditional assessment formats, be they long case or OSCE formats.
Yeah, well, and even just posing the question that you've posed is a very useful reminder that, you know, there is often a disconnect between what we express as the well-meaning and well-intentioned principles behind some of the things we do and how they're actually received. And it's a difficult concept or phenomenon to imagine a very straightforward search strategy. Can I ask you to tell people who are listening a little bit about how you tried to really narrow in and feel like you were getting a good representation of the literature?
Yeah, look, I would say that was one of the biggest challenges of the whole process, really tightening down that question. You know, it took weeks and perhaps even months of really defining that question. What are we looking for? What is the correct term to use? I spent a lot of time with the librarians at the University of Melbourne in you know, really honing down what are the correct terms to use for each particular database, how we're going to get the most out of this. And then once I'd done the search and going through to determine which articles were going to be included or not, that research question, it just came back to me, the absolute importance of having a very defined, sharp research question, because every single piece of data that I went through, I was constantly referring back to, is this answering the question that we've put in this review? And it was a challenge. And I think I remember at the time a clinical colleague made a passing comment that, oh, you can do a systematic review in a weekend. And just thinking, oh my gosh, no, certainly not. Maybe you came with a clinical question, but I think this was very much different to that. The importance and just making sure we all have the same idea of the definitions, and so really tightening up the meanings and using very precise terms, and constantly, as we were going through, you know, checking in that when we're reading the abstracts, for example, that we're all after the same thing. So, yeah, it was a slow process and a very thorough process.
Well, it seems inevitable when you get into a question like this of how are trainees receiving the assessments that there will be variability in perspectives across contexts, but even within, I imagine there's considerable variability with an individual student. So how do you grapple with getting some broader, more fundamental understanding of what's influencing their engagement or their perceptions of the usefulness of these assessments? We have to assume that there's no one size fits all.
Yeah, that's right. And look, even within many of the papers, the views could be quite polarized. So, you know, some trainees would talk about the incredible importance of these assessments, the quality feedback and the quality ratings that they were getting and how useful it is. And then, you know, on the opposite side, there were trainees making comments that it's just a tick box, I'm only doing it because I have to, those kind of sentiments. And putting all of that together, the thing that struck us was that there did seem to be described, and three authors really sort of encapsulated this as well, that different sides in trainees and their assessors and the environment that really seemed to drive which perspective they had. So those that had, you know, really engaged assessors and were engaged themselves and perhaps had, you know, environmental support were the ones that tended to report that they got the most out of the assessment messages that they were given, as opposed to the group that seemed to be overwhelmed by the task or didn't have the support, didn't have the assessor support, didn't understand the educational benefit of these. There was no time or setting or appropriate place to discuss this. And that group tend to sort of polarise into the group that there's not much point to these, there's not much value in the messages that we're gaining from this whole experience. So, yeah, that kind of thinking about the whole mix of, and a lot of papers talked about the engagement on both sides, about how crucial that is in dictating or leading what benefit you're going to get out of these assessment formats.
And any insights that you're able to develop in terms of what prompts people to engage? It sounds as though engagement is a fundamental predictor of the usefulness. And I'm trying to grapple with what might we do as educators to try to maximize the chance that that occurs.
It seemed almost like a circle to me that if you had an engaged assessor who was motivated and knew what they were doing in these assessments and keen to do them and made time and space to do them, then that fed on to generate an engaged trainee who would, you know, get caught up in this as well and be similarly then enthused by it. Many comments along the way that trainees made, things like, if you've got an assessor who's really enthused in it, you know, you're going to get something good out of it. But also, if you looked at the trainee themselves, I think that the circumstances they're placed in seem to have a huge impact as well. So got the feeling that even if you were the most learning orientated, is a term that we've used, so even if the trainee really wanted to gain some developmental information out of this, but the circumstances were against them, that would be very hard for them to achieve. So if they wanted to gain something from these assessment messages, but they had 80 of them to complete in a year with an assessor who wasn't interested, with no time or appropriate setting, then it's kind of difficult for them to maintain that on their own. So I think, you know, really having the top level support from the academic institution that the trainee's in and then support by the assessor or from the assessor, from the faculty, in terms of, you know, understanding the importance of the assessment formats and the information that can be generated from them, and then having the time and place to be able to do these assessments properly. Unfortunately, there were many instances where trainees described assessors were not conducting the assessments as they'd been designed. So trainees talked about things like having to beg assessors to do the assessments, or that their assessors would wander off during the middle of the assessments or give comments or ratings on things that they hadn't actually observed. So, you know, part of that comes back to training, but also to the fundamental enthusiasm of them. I guess one other comment was made as well, but perhaps these formats, and particularly the workplace assessments, were presented to the trainees and assessors perhaps without the background infrastructure to help them, and that's fostered a sense of ongoing resentment to them. So maybe even taking a step back and looking about making sure that these are acceptable and feasible for the stakeholders involved at the outset, and really providing what they need for their particular context is a key point as well.
Well, and it's clear from what you just said, as well as the additional nuance in the paper itself, that there are a lot of interacting pieces here, and it's going to be complex and likely difficult to succeed with every single attempt. And I say that as a way of prefacing my last question, which is, without meaning in any way to imply that there is a simple magic bullet, where would you suggest starting for someone who's worried about whether or not their assessments are having the desired impact?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I think as an assessor, really going back to the academic institution and as a group deciding what are these achieving, talking to the trainees, what are they hoping to get out of them, and making that time and space for them so that everyone's on the same page, so that you do have an agreed desire. And as you say, everyone's going to get a slightly different thing out of these assessments, and they're used in many different ways. So I guess just starting by looking at the individual context and getting that group consensus, I guess, that everyone is doing it for the same purpose in the same sort of a way.
That's wonderful. Being deliberate and intentional is how I'm interpreting that, because it's so easy for us as educators to feel like we've explained why we're doing things when we might have explained it to a class 10 years ago and just completely forgotten it because we feel like we've heard it a dozen times and nobody else has.
Yeah.
So again, a lot of the details we won't have the opportunity to cover, but I appreciate you taking the time to give us a snippet of some very interesting work, and wish you the best of luck with completing the PhD that's coming from this.
That's my pleasure.
Now the pleasure is mine. As we sign off, I'll just remind people that the paper we've been talking about is Trainees' Perspectives of Assessment Messages, a Narrative Systematic Review. You've been listening to Kate Scarf, and I think I forgot to mention at the beginning that the article will be in the March 2019 issue of Medical Education.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk, Kevin. Really appreciate it.